This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Today is December 24th, and this is my grandmother's birthday, Hawaii Otakata. She was born on December 24th in 1900 on the island of Kauai in Hawaii, and it's the smallest of the four major islands of the Hawaiian chain. And she was born on in a plantation camp in Hanama'alu. And, her parents came over to work in the sugarcane fields. And she was born the eldest of many daughters to come. There was one daughter who had been born before, and she died in infanthood. And it was said that when she was born, her parents wanted to give her a name that was very auspicious and would be a support for her to grow strong. And so she was given the name after Hawaii, but Hawaii-o, which is interesting because I feel that this was a very important piece of her story and how she found courage and strength and determination in her life, because this was a story that she would tell over and over again in all of her classes and in her lectures. I have with me today Marta Getty, who came to Reiki in, I think, must have been 1980, and we'll see when she comes on air. And she met my grandmother briefly when Hawaii Otakata was visiting Eugene, Oregon, with a new master that she had initiated, Bethel Fay. So, Marta, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Phyllis. It's good to be here again.
Great. And I would love it if you would tell us about your meetings with my grandmother.
Oh, okay. I was a pretty young master then, or master. I wasn't a master yet at that time. I was a new student of Reiki, less than 6 months when I met your grandmother. And when I found out she was coming to town with my teacher, Bethel Fay, I got very excited about it because, first of all, she was the oldest person I'd ever talked to before. And I knew I was going to be talking to her and that she would be at my house. And she was 80 then. And so, also, Bethel was bringing her, and it was a great honor for my Reiki teacher to be there with her. And I kept imagining myself that what a great fortune I had to meet the Grandmaster of Reiki at that time. And so I was very hyped up, very scared about doing things right and making sure that her stay was comfortable. And I was prepared to practically do everything that I could possibly do to make her stay comfortable. And then Bethel came to the house with this person, and the door opened, and in walks Bethel and Mrs. Takata. And Mrs. Takata was this tiny woman. She actually just stood slightly taller than my shoulder. And she was so kind-seeming and so had a lovely smile and was very excited to be with us at home and to do the things that she was planning to do for the week that she was in Oregon, in Eugene, Oregon, during this time. And I just could hardly say anything to her at all because I had the sense of awe. And that was only, like at 6 months worth of having Reiki. And I thought about her later on, many years later, about that experience and thought, I could only see her as this kind of light that came blowing into town and was going to leave some of her fairy dust for the rest of us. And then she would go away again doing whatever it was that she did in the world. And when I look back on that now, I have to laugh a little bit because I never got to know her as I would have liked to have known her, as a human being, as a person. And although I did have some little adventures with her, two or three that I'll tell you about, I wished that I had known enough at that time to ask different questions and to be with her in a different way. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had that same
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the first thing that happened was that she was doing some evening lectures, and she was talking to the public about Reiki in the middle of a bookstore, and I had organized the evening for her, and she was a pretty remarkable woman, clear and very strong. I would have to say that her impact on any space was kind of like an explosion of energy, a benign explosion of energy in a space. She really filled it. So you could feel her no matter what she was doing. And she was a very powerful speaker in a very gentle and soft way about Reiki that night. And at the end of the evening, there was a woman who wanted to do Reiki. And she said to me, because she was afraid, I think, to talk directly to Mrs. Takata, she said, "Well, do you think that Mrs. Takata would give me this class for less money, or she would take payments or something, because I don't have enough money to do it?" And I said, "Well, I don't know, so I'll ask." And so I went to talk to Mrs. Takata, and she said very clearly, without thinking a long time or anything, she said, "No, no, tell the lady that she needs to save her money. And then when she's ready, the money will be there, she will have saved it, and she will feel better about doing the class." So I went back and I told the woman, and she was very, very teary. And I felt, you know, I'm sort of a bleeding heart person sometimes, or at least I used to be. And I thought, well, how could she do that? How could she say no to her? I mean, she has a need. And after the woman left, I went back to Mrs. Takata and I said, "But why don't you do something like payments, or why don't you give a concession?" She didn't have any money, and she really obviously wanted to have the Reiki. And Mrs. Takata looked at me and she just said, "You know, when she earns the money for this class and she's ready for doing this class, she will have, she will experience it in a completely different way. If I gave it to her, I would be making a beggar out of her." I didn't understand that at the time, I have to say. And she said, "But don't worry, I think she'll be in this class anyway." I said, "You do?" She said, "Yes, I have a feeling she'll be there tomorrow." I thought, well, there's no chance of that, because the woman had left crying and saying she had no money and everything. And it was so amazing, because the next night, when the class came together, this woman was there, and she had the money in hand. So I was really curious, and I said, "Well, how did you get this?" And she said, "I went home," and she said, "I was very upset. I was sitting on my couch crying, and my boyfriend came over, and he said to me, 'What's going wrong? What's the matter? Why are you crying?'" And she said, "Well," she said, "I want to do this class. It's really important to me. I really want to do this class, but I can't because I don't have enough money." And he said, "Oh, what does it cost?" And she told him. And he said, "Well, I've been thinking about giving you a birthday present, but I wanted to give you something that was very meaningful to you. So I would like to give you the money for this class." And that's what happened. She came with the money, and she was prepared, and she knew how much she really wanted to be there.
Wow.
And it impressed me enormously. There were many things like that that happened during the time that she was there, but that was the first really impressive thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing that happened was that she had gone somewhere with my teacher, Bethel, and when they were returning, she had tripped and fallen, and she had hurt her leg, and it was bleeding. So they came into the house, and she lay down on my couch, and Bethel asked me if I would mind doing some Reiki on Mrs. Takata's leg, because Bethel had to do something else. I said, I'd be really happy to do that. And Mrs. Takata pulled up her pant leg so that I could put a clean cloth over her leg where it was injured and make sure everything was protected. And then I sat and Reiki'd her. And I thought to myself, this is a woman who's 80 years old. And her leg skin, the skin on her legs, is so clear. It could be of a person who was 20 or 30. It was just beautiful. I was really impressed with that. And so I asked her why her skin was so smooth there, and she said, "That's the Reiki." I can almost hear her voice in the echo, "That's the Reiki." Becky. It was really lovely.
So she taught a first degree class in Eugene during that time?
She taught a first degree class, and she taught a second degree class, and she did two or three evening lectures. One was particularly for the class, and the other two were for students that were coming back so they could meet her.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was a very special time for me, though. I stayed up all night one night thinking of good reasons for her to say yes to me when I asked her my very, very important question. And she was coming for breakfast in the morning, so I was going to make her tea, and we're going to have breakfast, and I was going to ask her this question, which was, would it be possible for me someday, in the far distant future probably, to become a Reiki master? And she surprised me totally. She looked at me, and she just, when I finally asked her the question, never giving her one single reason, she just looked at me, kind of cocked her head a little bit to one side, and she said, yes. I was like, it just left me with my mouth open and not a word. Well, what about all my explanations and reasons? But she never asked for anything.
No.
Pretty interesting.
Definitely not her style.
No, but you know, she had such an instinct, I think, too, because I knew the first time I heard the word Reiki that it was my life for the rest of my life. I could see a road that stretched clear to the end of my days. And I think that she knew when a person had a commitment, a dedication to Reiki in their life. I could feel that in her. So it was quite particular.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful.
Funniest thing that happened while we were there, though, or while she was visiting us, was the very last day that she was there, the last day and the last night, I had asked her if she would like to come and have dinner with my family and I. And she said, yes, she would love to do that. So I asked her if she had anything special that she would like to eat for dinner. You know, I was afraid of serving her the wrong food. I have one of those psychic gifts that's knowing exactly what food the person hates the most and then serving it. I was afraid to do that with her. So she said, I don't know. I really don't know. Do you just serve what you'd like to serve, and I'm sure that I will like it very much. Well, that was fine. So in the morning of the day that I was supposed to fix dinner, I started thinking about what on earth I was going to do. I wanted to do something special. So as the day wore on, I thought, I've got to make up my mind soon because she's going to come over for dinner at 5 o'clock. And suddenly I had this picture in my mind of a salmon, a fish. So I thought, I'll go and get some salmon. So I went down to the fish store and I bought this beautiful salmon to bake in the oven. And then just when I was preparing for that, getting everything ready, I was in the car on the way back, I suddenly had this picture in my mind of a Danish squash or pumpkin. And I thought, well, that's a very odd thing. A lot of people don't like those sorts of things. But I thought, okay, well, that's what came to my mind, so that's what I'll do. We have them growing in the garden. And then a little bit later, I had this huge, this amazing picture of this enormous green salad, beautiful green salad. I thought, oh, yes, I'll make a beautiful salad for her, too. So we had all the makings in the garden, so that's what I did. I baked the salmon, I baked the squash, and I made this beautiful green salad. And when she walked in the door just before dinner, she said to me, no, I'm so sorry, I didn't tell you what I would like to have for dinner. And I said, uh-oh, what did you want? And she said, it's funny, all day long I've been thinking of salmon. And she said, you know, I really had a taste in my mouth for those Danish squashes. I started to smile. I was thinking, oh, this is amazing. And then she said, and I had the idea it would be so wonderful to have a green salad. I haven't had a green salad for 2 or 3 days. And then I just laughed, and I just said, that's exactly what we're having for dinner tonight. And I felt like she'd been communicating her desires for food all day long.
Oh, wild.
It was really... really funny.
Yeah,
it certainly
great.
Relieved the tension in me because I was afraid of serving her liver or something, and
right.
I hated it.
Right. Great. Oh, that's a wonderful story. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so all you listeners out there, I just thought that since it was her birthday and she would be 109 today, that we would just take a couple of minutes to just picture this. A lot of you have seen, I'm sure, the photograph of Hawaii Otakata. Just close your eyes and imagine her, because that was the picture that is usually shown by masters, is one that's, I think she was about 79 when that was taken. So it was very close to the end of her life. And imagine her walking into Marta's house and having this conversation and sitting and eating her salmon and being with her just for a few moments of silence. Put your hands on yourself and give yourself a little Reiki while you do this. Allow the gratitude to come up for all the things that have happened in our lives as we have connected with the energy of Reiki. We give thanks for all the events and connections that were made in the past through Hawaii Otakata that brought us all Reiki today. Happy birthday. Thank you. I would love to go longer with the silence, but it's very bad, I think, on the air, that you're not supposed to have air silence. So anyway, we'll continue, but if you want to keep treating yourself, go for it. So we're going to segue now from my grandmother into our topic of treatment. And I had asked Marta to come in and talk about distant treatments, because we haven't done a specific show really on the effect of distant treatments and, you know, how this all comes to be. I know that some of you are first-degree students, some of you maybe don't have Reiki at all, so I'll just explain a little bit to you. In the first degree, I call, in each of the different levels, in our studentship, we as students are given a special tool, like something that we use to practice with, and what the practice brings us is more insight into ourselves and a deeper understanding of who we are as human beings, and the list goes on depending on the individual. In first degree, the gift is hands-on treatment, and we've spoken a lot about hands-on treatment. And in second degree, the gift is the symbols, the three symbols that are given in the second degree initiation. And one of those is for a distant treatment. And I think that distant treatment is very much, it's a very interesting topic for me, because there are different avenues of how to think about it. And I hope that we will give you a more global understanding about distant treatment and what the consequences or, what can I say, the results could be for each of us as students. So I'm going to ask Marta about her beginning of being a second degree student, because, interestingly enough, she told me the story, I think 30 years ago now, about when she first became a second degree student and sent someone, we can't figure out who, this distant treatment on an airplane. And it was for 2.5 hours, as I remember, because she wasn't told that there was you know, a certain time that she would do the distant treatment. So when she got to the to her destination and finally met the woman that she was treating, this woman had had a miraculous recovery. And the funny thing about it is that I use this story in my classes of second degree, but Marta has forgotten it. So we had a very interesting discussion about this before we started to record on the show. And but she says she has other stories that she does remember, and I don't know. So, Marta, you're on.
Oh, no.
So, just can you go back? I mean, how long ago was it when you took second degree?
Well, I've told my story on the air before, but and I've had people ask me about this. But when I took first degree, I did it in 4 days, and then the fifth day afterwards, I received the symbols for second degree, and the sixth day, I received my initiation and the class, and it was very close together. And I would have to say right away, before anything else, that I would never recommend doing it that way. That it's better to have time and space between those two.
Uh-huh.
So the very first physical treatment that I ever did, I used both first and the second degree skills in it.
Uh-huh.
So I never had the experience of one rather than the other.
Uh-huh.
So that I have to say that at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And then I have to also say that that was a particular class in that my teacher, who was just one of the most wonderful people in the whole world, had gotten scared. And when she was teaching her first and second degree class to us, we didn't know that it was also the first time she had taught it. And she had forgotten what she needed to teach. So basically, the only information I got for second degree was 3 symbols, memorized them, and then a very brief description, probably not lasting more than about half an hour, of what to do with these 3 symbols. And then she left. So I didn't really focus on using the distant treatment right away because I didn't think about it.
Uh-huh.
I was just getting used to my hands-on treatments until I don't remember the story that you reminded me of, except extremely vaguely. I remember there was something particular about it. That's it. I don't have any details. But I do remember that not too long after I did the first and second degree class, I received a telephone call one evening from a friend, and she was crying. And she said, "Oh, Marta," she said, "can you help me with that Reiki that you just learned?" And I said, "What can I do? What's the matter?" And she said, she had 3 children, very small children. She said, "My children's dog is dying. That we've just been to the vet, and they said that he has a disease called parvo. And it's a new disease that they don't have a vaccine for anything. They have no way of treating it. And the dog is dying. And the children are crying, and they're so upset, and I don't know what to do. Can you help?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. But I'll try. I'll try to send a distant treatment to the dog and see if that helps." And she said, "Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you so much." And she hung up. And then I thought, uh-oh, I don't know the name of the dog. And I didn't know if it was okay to treat dogs. And I had been taught also that you should have a photograph to treat. If you're going to do a distant treatment,
uh-huh,
you should have a photograph in front of you. So I thought, I don't have a photo, and I don't know the name. I better call back. And I tried to call back, and nobody answered the phone. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to trust that it'll be okay no matter what. So I sat down, and I thought, how would I name this dog? And I thought, I'm going to send this treatment to my friend Karen's children's dog. And that's what I did. And I sat there for about a couple of hours just sending to this dog. And then it was just as if the energy just turned off. There was no more energy. It just finished. So then I got up and I was moving around and doing other things, and I forgot about it. And I got a phone call in the morning the next day, and the woman said to me, "You will never believe what's happened." And I said, "What happened?" And she said, "My kids are outside in the garden playing with the dog." And I thought the dog was dying. And she said, "No, it's perfect. Last night it was really sick, and then all of a sudden it just got up and started playing. And it's been fine ever since." and it stayed fine for years after
Wow.
that.
Amazing.
Big surprise for me.
Really. So when you, so after some of these experiences, then did you go to? Did you attend my grandmother's first and second degree class when she was in Eugene?
Yes, I did.
Uh huh.
Yes.
And did you receive a bit more information?
Yes, I did. In the first degree class, she talked about a lot of different things. She talked, of course, about hand positions. And she talked about why we did the hand positions, and she was very informative. So each we went to first degree class for 3 hours each day for 4 days, and they were very full. Very
uh-huh.
full. She spoke
uh-huh.
and told her stories, and that was enjoyable. When she did the second degree class, that was a little bit different. There was a different attitude. It was a different kind of class, and much more deep. And I came away very impressed with some of the stories that she told in the
uh-huh.
class. So,
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, what is your... Do you remember at all having any thought about what am I doing as you sat and treated this dog? Did it just seem like magic or... I mean, I don't know. I'm just curious if you remembered how you felt.
Well, I do remember doing the treatment. I think it was the first really, the first animal I ever treated and, at a distance. And it was interesting. And I remember sitting with a cushion in my lap. And I remember that my hands were very, very, very hot.
Uh-huh.
But you know what's funny is that then... And even now, when I do distant treatments, it's as if all my thoughts turn off.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just there with the energy.
Uh-huh.
And it could be an hour, it could be 2 hours, but the time flies by, and it goes much more quickly than it seems.
Mm-hmm.
It would for an hour or two. So I didn't think about things at all. Every once in a while, though, when I treat people or when I treat in other situations, I do have thoughts that come in. And sometimes they're about the person and what's going on with them or a sensation of a feeling or a question to ask.
Uh-huh.
I mostly don't think of anything.
Uh-huh.
My mind just goes blank.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good. I think.
It is?
Yeah, I think so. I have a feeling, you know, at first, when I would send us in treatments, I would just think, oh, this is my imagination. And at that point, imagination was like fantasy, like it wasn't real. And now, after all these years of Reiki, what I realize is anything I can imagine is actually real. And that fantasies are more like future imaginations. I have a feeling that our mind... has really no boundaries about what we call reality. And this is a lesson that, this is something that I've gleaned from all of my distant treatments that I've done and received, actually, that the distant treatment takes us from feeling like, well, we're doing this and maybe it'll work and maybe it won't, and I don't know how it works, and it's a miracle, and, you know, there are all these different stages of trying to figure out what we're doing. And then at the end, I just feel this is something that is humanly possible, and somehow we've been given the opportunity to go through all these stages of, I hate to call it mind development, but some kind of development. With our thought processes, that we can actually then, you know, have real connection with people and have trust in it, you know, be able to understand that it is actually doing something.
Well, I think
does that make sense at all?
It does. Trust is a key word for me here because when I first started doing distant treatments, I did not have thoughts about, is this real? Is this magic? Is
right.
this anything? Is it connecting? I just did it. That was what I had been taught, and it actually functioned exactly as what I had been told it was going to do. So I didn't question it. It wasn't until many years later when students would have been asking many questions. Well, how do you know that this isn't something good, or isn't something bad, or what's really happening, or how can you possibly send a treatment to somebody who's as far away as Australia or Canada if you're in Europe, or you know, or even next door? How can this work? When they asked questions like that, I was always puzzled because it always worked, and so I didn't really need to know the exact mechanics of it.
Uh-huh. So what was your answer? I'm really curious.
Well, each time they ask, I tell them to do the treatments. Do the treatments and have the experiences, and then we can talk about it more deeply.
Uh-huh.
But when they come back, they say, oh, I see that it works this way. I feel that my hands get warm, and people tell me that they've had results, and so I know that it's working. And I say to them then, I cannot give you a scientific explanation of why this is so. I just know that this is the gift that I was given. These were the pieces of information I was given, and I used them as I was given, and it functioned just fine. And that's always been an adequate response for the students. That doesn't mean that they don't research further for themselves. I mean, many times I get letters from people telling me that they've researched quantum physics, and quantum physics gives a perfect explanation of why, well, Reiki overall, why it works, and also why a distant treatment would work.
Right.
And that's probably true. I've read a lot about quantum physics and lots of other things too, but I can't make an assumption that that's exactly the reason that Reiki works.
Right.
It seems like it might be true. I just know that I sit down, I do my symbols, and I wait for the energy to do what it needs to do for the time that it needs to do it.
Uh-huh.
And then I finish the treatment, and then I talk to the person, and they say, oh, I felt that, or I had this experience, or I feel better, or I feel worse, or whatever it is that's going on. I see, after 30 years of experiencing this, that I don't really need much more explanation than that.
Cool. Well, you know, I just remember that my grandmother's favorite books were The Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East. And in the early 1980s, these were still published. And in little books, little orange books, there are five of them in the series. And I loved reading them. I assume that you read them also during that time.
I did. I had read them before because they were commonly used in the world of rebirthing, and people in that time, in the 70s, people were looking at them a lot. They were published in the 30s, and they're very interesting books, really beautiful.
Really beautiful. And, you know, now I understand that they've been reprinted, but they've been edited, which is really too bad. So if you're out there and you can get a hold of an old copy, I don't know where my set went, they're really amazing books. But they talk about these Englishmen who go to somewhere in North India. Is that true?
They're in India. I don't remember.
They're somewhere in India. And they meet these yogis, basically, is who I would call them. Who can lie on a bed of nails and do all this kind of stuff and be in two places at the same time,
like bilocate.
Bilocate, right? And that was he was really the guy who was the author in theory was really fascinated by the bilocation process, and I've always thought that it was something that as human beings, or at maybe as a spirit, in our own spirit selves, we naturally do that. And that somehow in our distant treatment, that's kind of a training for getting to the point where we can bilocate at will. Because I actually think we do it. As kind of accidentally. Do you know what I mean? Like somehow people say, oh, you know, you were in my dream so vividly last night, or, you know, oh, I thought I saw you, you know, walking down the street. And I have this feeling that maybe it was happening, but they were kind of accidental sightings. And that sometime we're going to be able to select the time that we do it and actually select where we want to go.
And be more conscious about it.
And be definitely more conscious about it.
Well, I've actually had that experience myself of having people write to me or call me and say, oh, thanks for coming and talking with me last night.
Uh-huh.
Well, the problem was that they were 10,000 miles away, and I couldn't figure out what they were talking about. I've always felt embarrassed because, I mean, I didn't know anything about that, and I certainly wasn't dreaming about them. So, but they would say to me that I sat and talked with them and gave them some good advice and then went away. And I would feel very odd. I mean, what is really going on here? And I, at that time, I never thought of it as bilocating in the sense that you're talking about it, but I suppose that that is what it is, in a sense.
In a sense, I think so. And, you know, when I have it, when I'm sending a distant treatment, sometimes I feel like I go to the place, like I can see where the person is. They're sitting in their garden, and I know what they have on, and I have a conversation with them as I'm treating them. And then I think, oh, that's just my imagination. And then I call the person up, and I check with them, and what I have seen is actually true.
Yes.
So if that's not by location of some ilk, I don't know what is, but it puts me into a place of wondering, like, how can I, who is not very spiritually enlightened, well, not spiritually enlightened at all, do these things? And the answer to my question is, I can do them because it is actually a human property.
I agree totally with you on that. I think that we often make into an icon of something we need to reach, something that's natural to us, like an everyday thing, like having an arm or a leg. You know, we don't say, oh gosh, you know, I shouldn't have that arm or that leg, or that couldn't possibly be real. But when it comes to something like your description of the experience during a Reiki treatment, of course it's real. I mean, we're having that experience and we verify it over and over,
over
and over again,
yeah,
after a treatment. So, in a sense, I think it is a common, everyday kind of thing. And isn't that what happens, you know, when we do a Reiki class anyway? We talk to our students or we're told by others that we're doing something that's normal for us to do. We're not doing something that's special. We're just remembering something that we've always had, but perhaps lost our awareness of,
uh-huh, uh-huh,
at a time. So it makes perfect sense to me that there are different properties of that. And as we do Reiki, as we grow with it, that those properties would become more and more clear.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. I agree.
I'm not like you, though. I don't have visual impact normally. I don't see things. I normally feel things.
Uh-huh.
And I have sometimes found it difficult to separate my feelings from the other person's feelings. So I'm treating somebody, and suddenly perhaps I'll feel a sensation of nausea in my stomach, or perhaps,
oh,
I'll feel a sense of sadness, or a rush of anger, or a sudden feeling of being loved. I'll think to myself, oh, well, why did that happen? And I forget to connect it to the treatment until I'm talking with the person. And I'll say, oh, you know, of love. And the person will say to me that they've been having an experience of just feeling so loved in their life by someone in their family or an experience they'd had. Or perhaps someone who was angry would tell me that they've been extremely angry because of something that happened at work. Well, I mean, I don't carry that on after I've done the treatment or done the position on the body in that place, wherever it came up. But at the same time, that also is probably another aspect of bilocation.
Yeah, for sure. And but on a very visceral sense, huh? Yeah. Yeah, really. Well, I just want to tell you, listeners, if Marta went away for a few seconds there, I'm really sorry. we're talking on the phone, and there was a call that came in, and it kind of blanked our sound out a little bit. So anyway, we'll continue. Just a second. Hello, we're back again. Sorry for the interruption. Yeah, so I think that one of the things that happens with beginning students of Reiki is that we all first must, or anyway, it seemed like this was my process and my students' process, is that we start with the physical world first, and then we move to sort of our thought world, and then we can really leap from that into our what we might call imaginative world, which is actually the world where there are no limitations. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
So for those listeners who are beginning second degree or maybe have first degree, it's not an only thing. It's really a world that you must prepare for by doing your first degree and then knowing that you want to go deeper into this particular practice. And then you have the opportunity to, to explore these other possibilities. But one of the things that I'd like to also want to reassure first degree students is that lots of these things happen on with hands-on treatment also. That, yes, I have had experiences, for instance, very common experiences to have someone treat me, one person, and know that there are more than two hands on me.
Yes, I've had the same experience as well, and I've had people who've been receiving treatment say to me, "How did you do that? Do what? How did you have so many hands on me at once?"
Right.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Really? I never know what to say.
Really? Oh, yeah, that's me and my pals. Yeah, I mean, it's so real when that happens. It's just like it defies our need to be physical and puts us into another realm, which I feel is really a gift of Reiki.
Yeah, it is a beautiful gift of Reiki. I mean, I think that it gives us an opportunity to experience something wider than what we have been told or taught or think is possible.
Mm-hmm.
It has to expand our horizons to a certain extent.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It's quite remarkable.
Yes, very.
I can remember receiving distant treatments, too, that have made a huge difference to me, not just giving them. And I remember that I had had an accident, and I'd actually run into a stone wall, and it torn my arm up pretty badly.
Now, wait a minute. I just have this picture of you running by foot into a stone wall without any outside motivation. And I'm just wondering, Marta, about, well, we wouldn't want to say sanity, but maybe you could enlighten us a bit more about this image.
Oh, it's true. I had been riding a bicycle, and I was riding downhill, and somebody in a car came much too close to me, and I lost control.
Oh, okay.
The bike wheel hit a little lip in the road, and that threw me through the air right into a stone wall first.
Okay.
So I didn't really want to describe my accident to everybody, but if everybody wants to listen, that's fine.
Well, it gives me a better context. My imagination
<You're> right.
didn't go there. That's a failure of bilocation, I guess.
Well, you know, these visceral experiences, and you having the visual ones,
uh-huh.
Now we know. Anyway, my arm was pretty torn up, and when I went into the hospital, they checked me out, but they didn't clean the arm up because they were afraid of making the infection go deeper with all the gravel and dirt and things that were sitting in the wounds that they couldn't get out. So I went home with this arm full of gravel and dirt and abrasions and cuts that were pretty deep. And I, the next day, I had put myself on a Reiki support line for receiving treatment from people. And I was laying on the couch in the afternoon the day after, and I started feeling this very strange sensation, almost as if there was like a pressure holding me down on the couch where I was resting. And I thought, oh, what's that? Why am I feeling this? I thought, you know, something had happened in the accident. And then I realized it was the energy because I started to get very, very, very hot all over. And my arm started to itch like crazy. So I pulled my arm out from under the cover, and I was looking at it, and I had the experience of looking at my arm and watching as the healing occurred. It was so amazing. These rocks, little rocks and pieces of dirt would literally rise to the surface and just kind of roll over.
Wow, that is awesome.
Well, it was like watching a little zipper, you know, kind of coming through, and as it zipped through, these things would come out.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the day, I had a pink scar tissue. I didn't
wow.
have the open abrasions anymore. So that was a pretty strong experience of receiving a distant treatment.
Well, it wasn't just one distant treatment, though.
No, with lots of distant treatments, because I imagine quite a few people probably sent the Reiki to me because of the Reiki line, the support line. But it was a remarkable experience, because I had never been in a situation to receive Reiki in that way before.
Isn't that amazing?
It is. Well, it's so easy to give the experience to other people, you know, to do Reiki treatments at a distance, to share in a Reiki line, for instance, or to be sending to people who ask for treatments.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very different one to have a physical need where the body registers the changes so radically and obviously.
Uh-huh. Wow. That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. It is pretty wild. I'm continuously, I mean, after 30 years, I am still continuously in awe of what can happen when we put our hands to use in this way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It is remarkable.
Mm-hmm. So we have just a little time left, and I wanted to get into your healing the family tree. I don't know, we don't need to go into it, you know, in great detail, but it's sort of... the other end of the spectrum. So we talk a lot about the beginning experiences and so on, and then as second degree students mature and grow in their own experience, which is what I felt was happening with you as I observed you, you came to a place in your life where you wanted to use the second degree treatment process of distant treatment to go further into your own healing. And out of that came this process that you do, or I don't know if process is quite the right word, you can correct me later, about what you call healing the family tree. And I feel like this is another dimension of ourselves as human beings, because, you know, it's my philosophy that we are all of who we are, past and present and in the future right now, and that as we do our healing of our inner child, as we would say, something that happened to us when we were 5 years old, that five-year-old somehow is still within us, and so it's not like we're healing something that died and then, you know, has been laying around for a while. It's still alive. That five-year-old child is still alive within me. And I go back, remember, and reconcile that situation so that child can really be a part of my everyday life now. So this is my little vignette of how I see it. And since you're the feeling person, you probably have a totally different image, or maybe no image at all, but feelings. And could you share a little bit of that with us? The little story of how you maybe got there, or what the essence of it is?
There's so much I feel a little hesitant to open a doorway to it, but there is another way into it. There's a study called epigenetics, and it's related to quantum physics. And they're finally beginning to recognize that traumatic events in families actually pass down through the generations and have an effect in the future. One of those things, I know it sounds like I'm not talking about Reiki, but it's an example that helps us to understand where Reiki can go with it. If there is a time of famine, let's say 3 or 4 generations ago in Ireland, when there was the potato famine, if there is a terribly traumatic experience at that time, it will not only affect individuals, it will affect actually a culture or a country mm-hmm. for a period of time. And then the subsequent generations will be born with an experience, perhaps in some cases, where people are afraid of not having enough to eat.
Right.
Other people who have an aversion to potatoes.
Right.
Or they'll have something that perhaps may affect their family negatively or their own personal lives negatively.
Uh-huh.
And it can be related, if people look back at this, to the past events that have gone on that are in the family. So, yes, it's a valid assumption to say that a five-year-old child could have an experience, and that experience goes on with us into the future until it's balanced or absorbed, accepted in some way, where we're, let's say, healed from it. But working with the family tree, we're not only working with the things that have happened now that also have an effect into the future, but also the traumatic events of the past, which have affected our personal lives and affect our families into the future.
Uh-huh.
So working with Reiki, with the distant treatments, because we don't do this with first degree, I haven't been able to figure out a way for people to do it, we work into the past working with individual situations, and we look at family patterns and see what's there.
Uh-huh.
What kind of patterns, health patterns.
For uh-huh, uh-huh.
So, you know, every generation, the father of the family dies at 45 or 46 years of age of a heart attack. Well, that's a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Or in something that's very close to me is that there are patterns going back generations and generations, probably back to the beginning of time, where there have been many miscarriages and losses of children, and either before they've been born, you know, a stillborn child, or perhaps children that die after they've been born, a mother that dies at birth, or when the child is very young, these things come down through the generations as patterns as well.
Uh-huh.
And these are things that we can work with using the distant treatment process, to use the word that you used at the beginning. The reason I don't want to go into it in too much detail here is that simply it's so involved.
Right.
It's difficult to really describe more than that.
Right.
But I can't imagine doing that work. Well, to begin with, let's say I did it because I had my own personal experience that pushed me into learning about this. And it was a lovely experience in the end. And I carried that through with other people, teaching them how to work with it and not realizing how potent it was
uh-huh.
at the beginning. And then as time went by, and actually I have to say that this was advice from you, to really study it and know what was going on. And that's what I did. And
uh-huh.
I found out it was something remarkable
uh-huh.
and a real gift. And there are many ways of working with family. It's a very big subject all over the world today.
Right.
And even on the daily level of working with family trees, with genealogy.
Yes,
everybody's
exactly.
interested in it. But there are many forms of therapy. There's the family constellation work, which I think is absolutely very, very special work. And I also find that there are many other forms of therapy
mm-hmm.
working with families and
yep.
and whatnot and events.
Right.
And this is the Reiki way for me, from my Reiki way.
Uh-huh.
It isn't,
uh-huh.
you know, there are many ways of
right.
working with it, but
right.
I wanted to do it with Reiki.
Yeah. Well, I think that for advanced students of Reiki, it's an incredible process. And what I mean by advanced, for your listeners, is just that I feel that as we do our Reiki practice, our choices change, and the way that we look at the world changes, and how we are able to integrate into our own beings lots of things that have happened, and instead of trying to separate ourselves from them, we actually turn the other way and incorporate them into ourselves, which for me is about becoming one, not only with ourselves, but with humanity. So it takes some practice, and it's good to be prepared for this kind of work, because then it is not so traumatic on energetic levels, but you can take it in and Do it in a way that really is, well, one doesn't want to use the word efficient, but it's the only word that comes up for me right now. Would you say that that was true?
Efficient's a perfectly fine word to use,
yeah.
Because yes, there are things that happen in a random way. We don't expect them, and we address those things using our distant treatments if we want to. But also there are things such as the work with the family tree, for instance, that can be worked with in a way of choosing specifically who we're going to work with, how we're going to work with it, what we're going to do, and experiencing the results, and the results telling us what else we're going to do.
Uh-huh.
So there is a logical progression that happens.
Great. Well, now that we're into this, of course, the logical progression is that we're out of time. So, for those of you who are interested in more detail and maybe finding Marta somewhere in the world to attend one of these seminars with her, which is a long-term engagement, you can just ask her about this yourself. You can refer to her email that's on the e-card. We need to say goodbye. And I realize that just to give the listeners a little bit of a heads up, next week is December 31st, and it's New Year's Eve. And I'm going to do a New Year's Eve program. So it'll be meditation and talking about resolution and so on. So I would love for you to be in a place not driving your car, if you can, so that you can participate in the meditation, or maybe later on you can listen to it again on your iPod. Then beginning in January, we're going to continue with this idea or this theme of family and go to spiritual lineage, which will be very interesting, and see it as a way that we can see what our family tree and Reiki has given us and what perhaps the challenges are from our family tree. Interesting, eh, Marta?
It's a wonderful idea. I just, my mind is going off thinking, oh, this is fascinating, what we could do with this.
Okay, so I'm going to talk to Marta after we get off the phone, and maybe she'll be back on. So anyway, Marta, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Phyllis. It's such a pleasure each time that we do this.
Yes, it's wonderful. Great. And for you listeners, thank you very much. Have a wonderful Christmas. And if you don't celebrate Christmas, which is also totally fine, have a wonderful holiday or a wonderful day. And I'm going to be very low-key this year and just hang out and stay in my pajamas all day and watch movies and eat whatever I want. So take good care, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.